From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. If you take Highway 50 up to Tahoe, you'll pass the burn scar of the Caldor Fire. The 2021 wildfire burned more than 200,000 acres and ripped through the parts of three counties, El Dorado, Alpine, and Amador, destroying over 1,000 buildings and forcing tens of thousands of people to evacuate. The community hit hardest was the small town of Grizzly Flats. The Caldor Fire destroyed over two-thirds of the town's homes, along with a number of other buildings, including its church, school, fire station, and post office. 2.5 years later, rebuilding has been slow, but yesterday, the Grizzly Flats community marked a milestone in recovery. The post office reopened once again, and this moment is about more than just letters and packages. Joining us now to talk about what this reopening means for Grizzly Flats are Postmaster Alicia Leach, resident Eileen Strangefeld, and Mark Ulmer, chair of the Grizzly Flats Fire Safe Council. Good afternoon to all three of you. Thanks for taking the time.
Good to see you.
Good to see you. Alicia, I want to start with you because you are a busy bee right now. You are at the post office. How has the
past?
Yes, you are. I see it right behind you. A lot of hustle and bustle. How's the past like 24 hours or so been for you?
It's been pretty crazy. We've been very busy. The community has been very excited about this. I think I saw at least two-thirds of our community came through yesterday and exchanged their old keys for their new keys. We pointed out their boxes. We welcomed everybody home. It was a wonderful day yesterday.
You know, I don't think a lot of people think they're going to have a special moment at the post office, but you definitely witnessed that and you were receiving that all day yesterday and probably this morning too.
Yes. Yes. It was a fabulous day yesterday. And it felt like coming home. Even though I wasn't the postmaster before the fires, it definitely felt like coming home yesterday.
How long have you been the postmaster?
I became the postmaster, acting postmaster, in December of 2021, after the fires.
How have the past 2 years been? I know there's been rebuilding of the post office. It just reopened. How has your job been impacted in the past 2 years?
Well, we were working out of Diamond Springs. The Diamond Springs post office housed us for the last 2.5 years. They have been very gracious. They housed us. We had our own PO boxes out in their lobby where, you know, we worked the mail and we got the mail to our customers. And actually, I think most of the customers really got to know the staff there and really liked the staff there. The staff really helped take care of our customers there. It was pretty wonderful.
Yeah. The fact that you had such a large reception on the opening day, what does that tell you? I mean, as someone who is part of Grizzly Flats and the community, you've been with the community as you've been riding out just an unprecedented and really difficult couple of years. What does that tell you that you had so many people show up opening day?
Well, I know that from talking with customers that the post office was always a kind of a meeting place where they would stop and talk to one another. This is really the first big step, I think, in getting their community back.
Yeah. Eileen, I want to move over to you. What has been this week been like? What does the post office represent to you? What does it symbolize?
I went to the post office yesterday to get my new keys. And as I drove up, there were two women outside in front that were talking, just visiting each other. And I stopped and I looked and I said, you know, it's interesting to see that things don't change. This has been a meeting place for forever. And I'm just so glad to see everybody back and getting busy with the process of rebuilding. This has been very difficult for us and it's starting to come together. I'm just really, really proud to be part of Grizzly Flats.
Yeah, and I think the example yesterday is that even though a wildfire can destroy buildings, it could evacuate residents, obviously create a lot of trauma, that the heart of the community is still there. The heart of the people are people like you and fixtures that are important, like the post office.
We enjoy a community that is strong, that is dynamic, that is fun to be part of. And like I said, I'm just so glad to be back.
Mm-hmm. How has the process been for you over the past 2 years and counting?
It's been a difficult process. The actual building part has been slimlined by the county, which has been extremely helpful. There are a number of things that we just slid right into what we needed to have done. We still need to adhere to the Title 24 upgrades on the homes, but they're making it easier and easier. And in my particular case, the contractor is a very good family friend, and he put me at the top of his list. And so we started actually building in August, and we're almost done.
Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, you're at the finish line. How long have you lived in Grizzly Flats?
I did not live in Grizzly Flats a long time. My husband, my late husband and I moved up there. I believe it was either 14 or 15. I'm not positive. I'd have to go back and look. So we weren't there a long time, but it didn't take long before the community embraced us.
Yeah, because that was going to be my next point. I mean, maybe you've been there for a decade, but, you know, you didn't hesitate. You decided to rebuild following evacuating. A lot of people don't choose to do that. And I think the reason why has to do is because of the community. It's because of the heart of the community, your neighbors, and what the town means to you.
When I was burned out, I was really lost as to what I was going to do for the first week. And then eventually the CAL FIRE decided to let us up to look for anything that we could salvage from the fire. And as I was driving up the mountain, I had this overwhelming sense of coming home. And that's when I decided, that's it. I'm coming back. I'm going to rebuild, no matter what it takes.
Mark, you are the chair of the Grizzly Flats Fire Safe Council. Talk to us about this organization, what you and your colleagues do.
Well, it's basically a neighbors helping neighbors organization. We're all volunteers, and we were founded in 2004. We're celebrating our 20-year anniversary this coming April. And even pre-fire, we have worked with the community to try and reduce hazards from a wildland fire around their homes. And we can't help but think that we were successful in many ways for the homes that were saved, but also for saving lives and property here in the community, that there was not a tragic loss of life within the community during the Caldor fire. And even after the fire, we are working with those people whose homes have survived and trying to make their place ready for the next wildfire. And there will be another wildfire sometime. We don't know when. Hopefully not any time within our lifetimes, but we're also working with the returning residents and right from the ground up, trying to help their properties stay fire safe and be ready again for the next wildfire.
You know, when talking about this post office and, you know, the interactions that Eileen described, you know, people just chatting it up outside. I mean, these are daily interactions that are easy to take for granted, especially with how busy life can be. But I imagine like you and other people in Grizzly Flats really savor these moments and savor these wins, reopening of the post office. How has it been, Mark, over the last two and a half years almost, you know, losing these really important structures like a post office, a church, a school, you know, fixtures of the community and the impact that it had on the town?
It's been tremendous. You know, we lost every public building with the exception of our community services district, which provides water to our community. Fortunately, that infrastructure was saved. However, losing the church, the school, the Forest Service station, the post office has been tremendous. And the post office has hit every single person in this community. We've all had to drive 20 plus miles down to Diamond Springs to get our mail. And where we used to be able to get our mail on a daily basis, many of us reduced it down to once a week when we drive into town to do our weekly shopping, et cetera. So it's been tough to only get your mail once a week. And as Alicia had indicated, the postmaster in Diamond Springs has been wonderful in not only helping Alicia and her crew from Grizzly Flats out, but they have welcomed the residents of Grizzly Flats with open arms and have been so sympathetic and helpful to us in this difficult period. And it's been almost 2.5 years for us going down to Diamond Springs and getting our mail. So the post office opening their doors yesterday was huge for this community.
Yeah, and clearly a lot of people can resonate with that because there was a good turnout yesterday. Alicia, when you were waiting for the post office to get rebuilt, you were working in Diamond Springs, but maybe like the morning of the 31st yesterday, were you excited? Maybe was there some like anticipation, not knowing what to expect?
I was so excited, so nervous. I barely slept the night before. There was so much to do. I brought in a coffee pot so we could have coffee. I wanted everybody to just embrace the moment. I was so excited for the community. I was, like I said, it's amazing that we finally have this for the community.
Yeah. And there's actually going to be an official grand reopening, which is going to happen in a couple weeks in February. What can people look forward to? I mean, I don't know if many people have been to a celebration at the post office, but I think it just given what happened yesterday and today, you're going to have a pretty good turnout.
I believe we're going to have a great turnout. There is going to be a ribbon cutting ceremony. The district manager will be here. And I officially became the postmaster in April of 2022, but I refused to be sworn in as the postmaster until we actually had a building and I was here with my community. So I will be sworn in on that day as the postmaster finally.
Yeah.
Have you already given you a new keyboard?
Oh, that's the post office. Well, you're busy. That's a good thing. That's good noise in the background. Eileen, I mean, as we wrap up this conversation, what are you looking forward to this year? I mean, you mentioned you're rounding a really important corner to rebuilding and completing your home. What do you hope for in 2024?
I'm anxious to, I have two girlfriends that are master gardeners. So we're going to put together a landscaping project for my property, keeping in mind defensible space. And then I'm just going to settle in and veg out on my new sofa and watch my new TV.
Oh, that's invaluable after, the 2+ years that you and a lot of people have been through. Just being able to relax brings a big smile to my face. Mark, what's next for rebuilding in Grizzly Flats? When you talk to people in the community, the post office is amazing. Is there anything else in store for this year?
Well, it's actually in the process of finishing up. The Fire Safe Council just recently put the finishing touches on the community bulletin board at the post office, which the Fire Safe Council has partnered with the post office to rebuild the community bulletin board, which again was another meeting place for the community. And we were very fortunate in receiving a grant from the El Dorado Community Fund. And when we received this money, We all sat down and thought, what would be the best thing to do with this money? And we said the community bulletin board is the number one thing we need to do. So we contracted to have it rebuilt, and we were just putting on the finishing touches, and the timing was perfect with finishing the bulletin board and the reopening of the post office. So that's a major milestone, not only for us as a Fire Safe Council and our goals, in which we use that bulletin board also to educate the community for wildland fire safety, but also completing it for the community in conjunction with the opening of the post office. And it's, again, another meeting place.
Wonderful. Well, Mark, Alicia, and Eileen, thank you for joining us, taking some time and sharing some much well-deserved good news.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Of course. That is Postmaster Alicia Leach, Resident Eileen Strangefeld, and Mark Elmer, Chair of the Grizzly Flats Fire Safe Council. And they're discussing the reopening of the post office in the town of Grizzly Flats more than 2 years after the Caldor fire. Up next, Sacramento County set an ambitious goal to place a mental health clinician at its roughly 300 campuses. We'll learn about the setbacks and the bright spots in creating centers of wellness. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. More than 3 years ago, the Sacramento County Office of Education set out an ambitious goal to place a mental health clinician at every school in the county. That's roughly 300 campuses. The county superintendent joined Insight in the past about these centers of wellness and said that it wasn't really being done elsewhere in the state. Since its launch in the summer of 2020, progress has been slow, but there have been meaningful strides. Cap Radio Sacramento K-12 education reporter Shrishti Prabha has been following Sac County's rollout of mental health clinicians at schools and has a deeper understanding of the challenges and the bright spots in an initiative that will take years, even decades. Shrishti joins us with more about these hurdles and signs of promising potential. Hey, Shrishti.
Hi, Vicki.
So as I mentioned, this goes back years. The announcement from the Sacramento County Office of Education, SCOE, dates back to June of 2020. We've had the county superintendent on Insight about the Centers of Wellness in January of 2022. So that was 2 years ago. You have also joined us on Insight in the year since. So as you take a big, big step back, what do you think is most important for students and just more broadly the community to understand?
Yeah, I think the first thing is that not everything can be provided by the schools. And I think when I came and spoke about mental health in 2020, I mentioned that. I think local collaborations are super important. But obviously, COVID-19 exacerbated the youth mental health crisis. And so Sacramento County Office of Education had to kind of grapple with this shortage of mental health clinicians in its 300 schools. And at that time, and even now, they told me about this like bilateral approach of partnering with Medi-Cal to bring clinicians into the schools, and then also to create these school-based wellness centers that invest in recruiting students in high schools and helping them become licensed therapists so they can come back and serve the community. But that said, I know they want to do this, and I want them to do this, but the progress kind of stalled in 2022 when I last reported. It was 40 clinicians then, it's 40 clinicians now, which means it's kind of stagnated. They've maybe lost some, retained some. And the current projection indicates that even if they're adding, 10 clinicians a year, it's not going to be achieved until 2050, which is kind of scary. But schools like Ethel Baker Elementary, where I went, are demonstrating how these wellness centers can actually work if implemented.
So, I mean, as you just laid out, like there's challenges and hurdles that still exist. I mean, 2050 is a couple decades from now. But you've also been able, as you just mentioned, witness some of the benefits of what really is a culture shift in how schools approach mental and behavioral wellness when it comes to students. Can you give us some examples of what you encountered in your reporting and who you met?
That is my favorite part. So yes, Ethel Baker, whose students are 97% English language learners or qualify for free and reduced lunch, was one of the first to develop and pilot a school-based mental health program in 2020. So now we're checking in 2024. And when I went, the classes began their day with a community circle that where they can share their feelings and kind of check in to see where they're at when they start their day. Here's what it looks like in Chris Acton's fifth grade classroom at the school, where they use a chart of emotions to describe how they're starting the day.
I feel goofy.
You feel goofy? Why is that?
Because I went to sleep at 5 and I barely got any hours of sleep. And I couldn't sleep.
5 last night or 5 this morning?
5 in the morning.
Oh my goodness.
I feel happy because I like going to brain break to play soccer.
So they call time away from learning brain breaks, which I think is really cute, but it also destigmatizes the need of active time away from a desk. And then the check-in serves to see where the student is when they're coming in to learn. So sleeping at 5 a.m. might make it difficult, like she said.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And so I think it's great that they're doing this check-in and making sure the student is ready to learn. And here's an example of what that looks like also in a different form in Suchoi Seicho's fourth grade class in light of MLK Day.
I have a dream that everybody passes college.
I have a dream that world hunger would end.
I had a dream that world violence would end.
I have a dream that everyone around the world will understand that girls can like soccer and boys can wear dresses.
Oh, that's a good one.
I have a dream that everyone from other countries can have a green card so they can come to California.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, and this is just such a wonderful space that is being given to students. Does this actually translate down to home life? Are parents noticing a difference in their children?
Absolutely, they are. I spoke with a parent at Ethel Baker. Her name is Latrina Connor, and her family was going through kind of a tough time. She had 3 children, and all 3 have utilized the Wellness Center.
It's also people that you could confide in, that we could trust, if, you know, to seek other help, because it's questions that she'd be able to ask that I might not know to ask. For me, it's a very rewarding experience, and I appreciate all the help because I have seen a drastic change in my kids' behavior and their communication.
And her son, who graduated from Ethel Baker, has sought services at his new school.
So it has been challenging times, but other than that, we actually got through it. It worked out for us. My son even seeks for therapy at his new school, and he knows that he doesn't have to hide his feelings.
And in a conversation between me and Latrina's daughter, a sixth grader, Leannity Gillette, she explains how she's using the skills taught to her by the clinician on staff, Elizabeth Kirby.
Last time I was irritated and I couldn't focus on the math problem. And I was doing my homework at the same time.
What are some tricks that you've learned from Miss Elizabeth?
Well, I could either color and draw, or we have a Zen zone where I can go back there for a minute to play with some toys and read books.
Mm. You know, what I'm just learning from the students, also the parent, is that what they are taking in that class, it could just be a few moments. I mean, it pays dividends like throughout their life as they get older, which is great, but can be different if you haven't been to school in a while, like myself. So if you haven't been in a classroom for years or decades, what are the biggest changes that you notice from the way things were done to how they're done now?
Yeah, I'm only going into classrooms because this is my job. It's kind of amazing that I get to do it. They have Zen zones in the classroom, which is something Leannity just talked about. They're kind of usually in the back or to the side, but a student can take a break from learning if they're feeling anxious or frustrated or sad, and they have toys and anxiety tools there. There is also a wellness center room on site, which houses the clinician, and it has beanbags and fidget toys and art supplies. So from my understanding, any student can come into that space as well. But I think it's more about the approach and the climate of the school. And you need buy-in from all the adults.
Yeah. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with CAP Radio Sacramento education reporter Shrishti Prabha, who is updating the county's years-long push to create centers of wellness and place a mental health clinician at all 300 campuses in the county. So when this was announced back in June of 2020, the initial cohort was about 11 schools out of 300. 3.5 years later, you said that stalled a bit. So what is the number now?
Yes, it's 40 schools. You can find my compiled list in my story online. Interestingly, every district is represented except Elk Grove, which could mean two things. So the district might already have strong relationships with local organizations that can provide these services, or the district doesn't rank highly in the county's equity index, which is how we're determining where the school-based mental wellness centers are being put. And I think that makes sense. It's being put in communities that require it most first.
Mm. When you talk to staff on campus and just with the County of Education, what are you learning about the biggest reasons behind progress being slow and even stalled?
There are three major things. Funding, it's always funding, mental health professional shortages, and a need for a culture shift surrounding mental health.
Yeah, and this is a big lift, and we can't ignore the fact that it happened like right at the height and the peak of the pandemic, the onset of the pandemic in June of 2020. So when you talk to school staff, I mean, how do you get a better understanding of what needed to change at the foundational level, the lift that it really took to achieve what is a culture shift?
It was clearly a difficult task, and COVID complicated this more. Nathan McGill, principal at Ethel Baker, is kind of the driving force for culturally competent mental health supports on site. He mentions that they struggle to get the parents to understand trauma-informed practices in the schools.
When COVID happened, folks couldn't even come on campus. And so the sell for mental health and trusting your child with a person that you don't know to maybe get therapy was a big lift. And so when we kind of created conditions in each classroom that were a lot safer and had teachers really like talking about wellness, it made it safer for parents to feel it and believe it. And so the next step is really trying to like pull down stigma about mental health services for all of our families.
But consistent and representative support was key. Ava Gomez, a staffer at Ethel Baker, witnessed the gradual change at the school.
But also the difference that makes to the families, right, and seeing that, you know, the school is staffed with people that look like them, mm-hmm, and how much more buy-in we get,
right,
because they are now feeling comfortable in sharing their experiences and feel a sense of understanding and belonging, mm-hmm, and feel safer in sending their students to a school that's representative of their culture and community.
But the reason the school-based wellness site works best is because it's a team effort. Even now at Ethel Baker, technically only one clinician is serving 650 students. But because of the way mental health is embedded into the framework of the school, it focuses on prevention and students don't need to seek the clinician to get the help, or they have other adults in the space that can also help them.
Okay, yeah, that's a good... I'm glad you laid that out, because I'm like, one for 650? I mean, that sounds like a lot. I mean, do they have a realistic idea when they're going to accomplish this goal of having a clinician at every campus in the county?
No. Currently, it seems even if they're adding 10 clinicians, it'll take 25 years to make that happen. They're talking about the program as a startup with the hopes to prove its efficacy and get more funding, which is something they have been able to do. And just this last year, tiered mental health supports in schools, which is what Ethel Baker is modeling, was pushed in the state legislature and actually passed. So there should be money coming to the county to ramp up these services.
Yeah, funding is so important, and not one-time funding. You need sustainable funding for something like this. And I remember talking about that with the county superintendent, Dave Gordon, when he joined us about this like 2 years ago. And he said that they're using, at the time, like a pretty novel approach to fund this. They're using Medi-Cal funding. Remind us how this works.
Absolutely. I think it is super important to understand how this works. So the Office of Education is diving into the pool of Medi-Cal funding that is allocated to their students. So the Office of Education tells me that roughly 65% of the students in the county are on Medi-Cal. And so that can sustain and reimburse the salary of a clinician. But despite the need, only 6% of young people are accessing these services, and data suggests that 20% of school-aged kids have a diagnosed mental health disorder. So there's a huge disparity between access and the number of students actually receiving that service. So hopefully, you know, with more clinicians on site, that'll be something that'll be possible.
Yeah. In the meantime, are there alternatives that schools are turning to provide mental wellness while the county still works to scale up?
Yes. In the interim, efforts are being made to supplement. The collaborations involve collaborating with locally culturally responsive mental health programs, such as QSpot, which is focusing on LGBTQ plus youth. And Roberts Family Development Center has a girls and boys club focusing on boys and girls of color. The effectiveness of these programs and collaborations are actually being seen by Girls Club. Destiny Robbins, a lead therapist for the program, speaks to me about the need for Girls Club at MLK Technology Academy, which is in the Del Paso area. And she talks about how Girls Club's data reports positive outcomes for students attending the program.
You know, as a minority woman myself, I know what it feels like to be the only one in the room sometimes. So culturally sensitive programming is crucial. You know, it can make or break someone's life, their chances to thrive, you know.
And what she was saying is the concept, the idea of self-esteem, as you increase their self-esteem, they see positive results in decrease in anger, anxiety, and depression, as well as disruptive behavior.
Yeah, and even if you are feeling those disruptive behaviors, I think a lot of us have, we can relate to that. It's also good to have the tools to know how to navigate that in a healthy way. And so it's great to learn that there are organizations and even some campuses that are actually, you know, teaching that at a young age. So now we're more than 3 years into this program, as we've just learned from you. Far, far from over. What are you interested in following?
I'm interested in sustainable, culturally responsive mental health programming, maybe more collaborations, more absorption, more funding for them, an increase in school-based wellness centers. So I hope in the next year and a half after I report this, I can come back and tell you there's significantly more. And then I want more data, honestly, on students' mental health, which is a survey that only happens every 2 years. So the last time I reported, I had pretty robust data. This time, we're not totally sure what the climate of mental health for students is, but I'm looking forward to getting to know more about that.
Srishti, as always, thank you.
Thank you.
And that is CAP Radio Sacramento education reporter Srishti Prabha updating the county's years-long push to create centers of wellness and place a mental health clinician at all 300 campuses in the county. Still ahead, wanting to go to college is one thing. Figuring out applications, financial aid is another big lift. But there is help this weekend. We're going to preview the largest bilingual and binational university fair in Northern California. It's happening in Sacramento for thousands of students. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment. Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. If you have a student in your family looking to head to college, you probably already know that this year's financial aid situation has been a long and a challenging road. The free application for federal student aid, FAFSA, was revamped, but it also was rolled out much later than normal. Financial aid awards will be delayed even further because the Department of Education made some last-minute changes, making already tight deadlines and decisions even tighter. Plus, there are Cal Grants, Pell Grants, California Dream Act applications, scholarships to consider. There is a lot. The list goes on and on. This weekend, the Mexico Consulate is hosting an event called Steps to College. It is the largest bilingual and binational university fair in Northern California. There'll be representatives from colleges and universities, higher education experts, as well as financial aid advocates to help students navigate the college experience and learn about their financial options for higher education. Joining us with more on Steps to College are Miguel Molina, an academic advisor for the College Assistance Migrant Program held at Sacramento State, and Donatio Gonzalez with the Consul General of Mexico in Sacramento. Good afternoon to you both.
Thank you.
Hi. Hola, Vicky.
Hola. Welcome. I know, Gonzalez and Gonzalez. We're like primos.
Conos, primos. Exactly. That's what I was thinking. Yes. Like, we're primos here.
Yes. Okay, Donatio, I want to start with you. I mean, this is such a big event. It's important for a lot of people. How did this college fair come about?
I'm so excited about this, to be honest. This is a community festivity, I would say. You know, yes, it's for education and it's for all the people who live here in North California interested in to get help about education, about to get advices in terms of how to get these applications, as you mentioned it, the process to get into and be part of that, but also advising them in terms of funding and scholarships, you know, like university is expensive. Yeah, like I have still some friends who's like, oh, I'm still paying my tuition. So we know about that, and that's part of the process of this fair, to help them to give them the proper steps of how to get mm-hmm. this and how to achieve this dream. In terms of also, as you know, we have a huge number of population of migrants here in California, Hispanic community. So some of them, maybe their papers, their documents, they're not regulated, and they say like, well, my papers are not per se in the best regulation possible, but I still want to get education. And yes, you have the right to get the proper education and the highest one. Mm-hmm. So in terms of that, also we help them with a group of lawyers to let them know how to deal with situation like this. So this is basically a fair for everyone. Everyone is welcome here. It doesn't matter, as always, we are a very inclusive consulate and a very inclusive government, that it doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, what's your sexual orientation. If you have even a disability, we will help you with that. We want to make this party as much as inclusive as possible. So this is for everyone. And just because we are Mexican, of course, we want to have fun. We want to party. And in terms of it will be music, will be food. We have a famous and a great singer, Camila Fernandez, who will perform free for all our attendees and guests. So yeah, this is also a party. And we welcome you there. We will hope to see you this Saturday in the consulate.
Yeah. It's good to mix a little fun with business, you know, have a party. And also, I mean, that's just incredible. I kind of go back to when I was going to college, like I was navigating it by myself. My parents didn't really, you know how to help, you know, mm-hmm. and that was completely understandable. It's a lot to take in, but you're really offering a single location, a one-day fair where you can spend all day and people will help walk you through the process, which is, it really is a case-by-case basis. Like, no mm-hmm. two situations are the same.
That's true. And here with me is Dr. Molina, who is a great ally in this event. And maybe Dr. Molina could provide you more information about the content of the workshops, because also we will be dealing not just with information, but also with workshops. So maybe, Doctor, you could share it with the audience here and with Vicky, what will be the content of these workshops?
Yeah, happy to do so. You know, this is a very comprehensive college fair, and it came together because we had a lot of leaders from community colleges, California State Universities, University of California, and private universities that said, let's work smarter together. Let's pull this together and really get this audience touched. And so we know that most of the kids and the families are first generation, first ones to go to their families. We know that as they're hitting high school and college, that they really can't go back to their parents and ask, how do I do this? Because their parents haven't gone to college or they haven't gone to the university. So they don't understand these processes. So here we are, the professionals at the higher ed institutions, and we're ready to really give these students a how do I do it and mm-hmm. spoon feed them through it. So we have workshops on financial aid, how to do either the California Dream Act application for Dreamers, but we also have the FAFSA as well. We give workshops on resources for the Dreamers. We have workshops on admissions for California State University, University of California, California Community Colleges, and even the independent colleges and universities. But we take that even a step further. We have Mexico universities who will come and guide students who have interest to even go into Mexico and study in universities there. And it's just a rich binational touch to this college fair. But in addition to that, we also provide workshops for the parents in Spanish. We have a great organization called PIQUE that helps us. We are also teaching the parents how to get their GEDs through a program called HEP, which is from Sac State. Also the CAMP program, which I'm part of. We also teach students that are coming from farm worker or migrant backgrounds that they have an opportunity to go to college and be helped in their first year when they enter the university. And so they'll be there as well. But we're also going to teach people about tech careers and how to get in there, and also how to finance their student loans and basically financial literacy as well. So it's a wide, rich menu. And if the students can't hit all of the workshops, not to worry. We're going to record them and put them on our website afterwards. So, but we want them to be there all day, enjoy the workshops, enjoy the entertainment, enjoy the food trucks. Mm-hmm.
We're going to have fun.
Mariachis are going to be there. I mean, it's going to be very festive. And this is our 14th year of doing this. So we've got it down.
That is wonderful. I mean, especially when you talk about financial literacy, that's not necessarily taught at home or at school. And, you know, once you become 18 and if you, you know, take out a college loan, I mean, there's not really a handbook for that that's easily accessible. So, I mean, it's wonderful that this workshop or this day fair will help walk people through the process and also let them know what they can take advantage of so they don't leave money on the table, you know, if it could help fund their education, because college is expensive.
That's true. And this is the biggest educational fair in the north of California. It's something that is important to mention. It's completely free. There's no cost for any of the events or workshops. Like, this is completely free. This is also important to mention. And once again, we welcome everyone. I know that maybe because it's organized, one of the organizers is Mexico, the Consulate of Mexico, and we're talking about Hispanics and all of this. Maybe they will say like, oh, maybe this is only for Hispanic people or Latinos. No, this is for everyone. You know, even that if you don't speak Spanish, just because it's actually, this is a binational and bilingual fair. So we welcome everyone. So maybe it's like, oh, I'm interested into studying one of the universities in Mexico. And we will also guide you in terms of that. So that's what I said. Like I mentioned, this is a party and a festivity for everyone. And all of you, you are welcome. And I would love to see all of you this Saturday at 9 a.m. in our consulate. This will be from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And something that if I share with you this, Vicky, and with your audience, is like,
yes,
I feel
do.
Very proud, honored that this is an event built by community to the community. This is not just an initiative of the government of Mexico. This is an initiative where lots of people, including networks, media, NGOs, civil society, the academic field, like everyone who is on board and wants to bring something to this party. I mean, it's a community festivity for the rest of our people. So that makes me feel so proud that everyone and all of people here is involved, even politicians. And we will have the mayor of Sacramento participating in the opening ceremony. We will have members of the Congress. We will have council members. So it's like everyone is on board. And I'm so proud to see that everyone is joining to this great initiative in favor of the new generations, in favor of education, in favor to do things bigger and help them to achieve those big dreams, you know? So that makes me feel so happy that this is a community event.
Yeah, because you're going to be expecting thousands of people. I mean, you're serving thousands of students. And Miguel, I mean, given that you're with the CAMP program at Sac State, that's the College Assistance Migrant Program, this has been in place for quite a while as well.
Yes.
When you talk to students today, what are the challenges that you're hearing from them and their families about wanting to attend college, but, you know, unsure if they can actually make it happen?
Well, their biggest fears are financing first. You know, they're not sure how financial aid works. And they also don't really even understand private scholarships. And that's the starting point. But then also, how do the systems work? For example, I could go to community college for 2 years free, thanks to the Promise Grant in California. And most students don't even know how that works. They have to be full-time students, they have to graduate from high school, and they have to apply for financial aid. They do those three elements, they're free no matter what their income is in their families at the California Community College. They're going to hear about that in one of the workshops. California State University, University of California, they have programs as well. For example, the University of California has the Blue and Gold Scholarship. Any family that makes under $80,000 is free at the University of California. So if they qualify and they're admitted, they could go to one of the most prestigious systems in the United States for free. So these are the kind of things they'll learn about at the Steps to College through our speakers that are going to talk about, you know, admissions, they're going to talk about financial aid, how do I pay for it, all those different types of things that they need. And then the other part is they get to meet people that look like them. They get to meet the recruiters from all these colleges. We're going to have almost 70 colleges and universities there in a college fair. It's in a giant tent. They're building it already today around this storm. But we're ready to go. And there's not going to be rain on Saturday. And it is going to be free. Again, it's from 9 to 3 o'clock. The address is 2093 Arena Boulevard. And we do ask that the students, if you can, pre-register. We're actually going to be raffling some laptops if you pre-register. And so if you would go to stepstocollegesac.org, I'll say that again, stepstocollegesac.org, pre-register, because anybody who's pre-registered, your name's going to go into that hat for a raffle of some laptops. And so there you go. There's even another extra piece to this party. And so it's really a nice, comprehensive event.
Given that this has been going on for 14 years now, I am sure that, you know, you have some pretty great stories that keep you doing it year after year. I mean, can you kind of help us visualize, you know, how impactful this is for a student who spends the day there, how they go in and then also how they leave.
What's amazing is now some of these people that I started with 14 years ago, they're parents now. They're professionals. Now I'm getting their teenagers who are going to come through. So now I'm seeing generations come through thanks to this effort. And so there's nothing better than that. Now you know that the information is starting to trickle down and get wider. And the Latino population, for example, here at Sac State, that's 36% of this campus. That's the largest group at Sacramento State. And so that should give you an idea of the need for these students to get the information. If that's that large here at Sac State, right around this whole region, the Latino population needs information. But so does everyone else. And that's why we're very open college fair for anyone to come, not just Latinos, but we're hoping that everybody comes and it's free. They trust that there's food there. There's going to be food trucks available for them and plenty of entertainment.
Mm. You know, given that also the Mexican consulate is obviously open to the community, I mean, what are you hearing from the community about what's needed? Because you're obviously filling a gap by being a space of information and education for a lot of people.
This is a platform to really provide people an opportunity to get educated in terms of how to access to university, you know, universities. Sometimes, let me give context to the people who are listening to us and they can see us, but I'm the youngest member of the group of ambassadors of Mexico. I'm 37. And in terms of that, for me, it's important to give visibility to everyone, you know. That's part of my flag in terms of bringing a platform that everyone can be part of, but at the same time that you can access to. Sometimes we see minority groups, including migrants, as people who need protection or they are vulnerable or, yes, we are target of hate speech and a lot of things that actually will be narratives in the forthcoming days in terms of politics. But also, it's important to say that migrants here, they make a huge difference, you know. And to make a huge difference is not just about attitude and personality. It's also about education. So in terms of that, that's why we're promoting that these new generations of migrants, of new generations of people who or were born here and they came from migrants' families, or they migrated to this country in a young age, they get the opportunity and accessibility to get the highest education possible and get all the resources to make their dreams come true in terms of profession, you know, and work as we are doing now, community, that they be part of this and now be an important actors to work for the generations of the next community.
Wonderful. Yeah. Well, Don Etio and Dr. Molina, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Muchas gracias por having us.
Yes, what a great event that's going to be happening this weekend. That is Dr. Miguel Molina, the academic advisor for the College Assistance Migrant Program at Sac State, and Don Etio Gonzalez, the Consul General of Mexico in Sacramento. And the event, Steps to College, is happening Saturday, 9 to 3 p.m. It is free of charge. And that is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests and this event at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. I'm Vicky Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. We'll catch you back here on Monday.